Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
It's time to get out and explore.
Melissa in the Morning brings you science you may not know on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
I always love emails from David Mestre, especially when they start with, "So you just got hit by a meteorite." Well, no, I didn't personally get hit by a meteorite there, David, but I know that we did purposely like drive into one essentially last week. Good morning. How are you?
How are you?
I'm doing fine. So what are we chatting about today?
Well, you know, it turns out that yesterday, November 30th, is an anniversary of sorts. It's the 67th anniversary of the day that Mrs. Ann Hodges of Sylacauga, Alabama, got hit by a meteorite.
Wait, seriously?
Yes, seriously. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
This is an actual historic event. It's 67 years ago. So the story is that, you know, Mrs. Ann Hodges is just a typical Alabama housewife, and she's living in her home, and she decides she's going to take a nap in her living room. So she's just napping away on her couch, and suddenly, out of nowhere, i.e. space, a rock falls right through her roof, bounced off her radio, and slammed her in the hip while she was asleep.
Okay, wait. Now, here, I have a couple problems with this story. First of all, there is no problem with taking naps on the couch, i.e. I do it almost 3-4 days a week. Second of all, the timing of her nap is perfectly fine because maybe she works a morning shift just like I do, and I take naps very often at 2:45 in the afternoon. And this is just terrifying. This whole thing is just is too much for me. This feels too real.
I would probably rethink that. I would definitely rethink that. So amazingly, so she gets hit, and
talk about a wake-up call. Good God.
A total wake-up call. And everything goes bananas. So her mom is actually in the kitchen, runs in. She's, you know, Mrs. Hodges is screaming in pain. She doesn't know what happened.
Right.
There's smoke everywhere in the house. And then suddenly the entire house is crawling with people. The police department show up. The fire department show up. Neighbors start showing up. Now, this is 1954. And so when 1954 is around, when things are falling from the sky, people are thinking, oh, my gosh, this is a UFO landing.
Right.
Or a crash.
Right.
And so everybody's around and just trying to figure out what had happened. So the story is that the mayor actually showed up to this, and neighbors were around. But the mayor is actually looking around with the police chief, and they're the ones that see the hole in the ceiling. And apparently they actually find the rock. Now, they don't know what it is, and they end up confiscating it. And it turns
out how big was the rock? I'm sorry, I missed that part. How big was it?
That's a really good question. Yeah, so the rock itself is about the size of a softball.
And it wasn't that big. Okay, so yeah, they probably didn't even see that it went through the roof.
No. It was really kind of hard to find because, I said, it was just this smoke all over the place. This thing weighed 8.5 pounds. And some people think that if it hadn't actually hit a roof, banged through a ceiling, and then also hit a radio, had it actually hit Mrs. Hodges instead, it might have killed her.
It could have killed her. Right. I would think with that kind of pressure and everything.
Absolutely.
That's crazy. That's like the size of a newborn. That's crazy.
Yeah. So it was really kind of wild. So eventually, though, you know, as things start to settle, she actually ends up in the hospital, but not because of her injuries, because of the anxiety of having all of these people around.
Yeah, sure. It's crazy.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening is that there's a big fight over who owns the meteorite.
Well, why wouldn't it go to her? I mean, it landed in her house.
So what happens is that the house actually didn't belong to her. She's renting the house.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Come on. The girl got hit by a friggin' meteorite. Come on.
So the landlord actually sues and says, I want the meteorite because I want to sell the meteorite because I've got a hole in my house.
Yeah, well, tough. The woman has a hole in her hip. Come on now.
Yes, exactly. So this actually leads to a year. This is a year-long litigation.
Wow.
Who ends up owning the meteorite. Now, what's really wild is that the meteorite now has some real value because today is actually the 67th anniversary of the second rock meteorite that was actually found in Alabama, Sylacauga, Alabama again, because Julius McKinney was driving around on his mule-drawn wagon, and the mule finds a rock.
Wait a minute. Stop it. Hold on, David. Yeah. So 67 years ago yesterday, this woman gets hit in the hip with a meteorite. You're saying 67 years ago today, some guy's driving around and they find a meteorite?
Yes.
In Alabama. This all happened in Alabama.
Just a few miles from this fall, exactly. And so this is the second fragment of the fall. This is Julius McKinney's fragment, which actually was found by the mule. But what happens is that he, when he hears that the police have it and that it was sent to the Air Force have it, and when they come back, they say, this is not a UFO, this is not an airplane, this is actually a meteorite, Julius McKinney starts going, wait, I found a rock too. And when he gets it inspected, he finds that he has a meteorite as well. It's two meteorites that fell.
Wow. You know?
And he actually gets a chance to sell his to a collector that donates it to the Smithsonian Institution. And with the money, he ends up buying a car and a house.
Wow. Yeah, which is a lot. That was a lot of money back then. That's crazy.
That was a lot of money back then. So that puts a lot of pressure on the Hodges to try and figure out what to do with this rock. So eventually they do settle. They settle in court, and the land lady, she actually gets up. Her name was Birdie Guy. Birdie gets $500 to repair her house.
Great.
And the Hodges end up taking the rock, the meteorite. The problem is that they couldn't find a buyer, and that actually put a lot of stress on the Mr. and Mrs. Hodges. They end up actually getting divorced, which is kind of wild.
Well, that happens.
Yeah, and so the rock is basically in her possession because it did hit her.
Right.
And so it just caused her so much trouble because people were kind of curious about this thing, and they gave her 15 minutes of fame. And so what she ended up doing was she ended up donating the meteorite as well as her radio to the university.
That's cool.
Yeah, to the Museum of Natural History. It's a university museum in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. So if you decide to drive around that part of Alabama, check out the meteorite that actually hit Mrs. Hodges and the radio that it bounced off of. Which is kind of wild because it's sort of a weird quirk in history. Had the Earth just been a little bit different, it might have hit instead the drive-in theater called the Comet Theater, which is across the street.
Well, go figure, of course. That would have just been too poetic.
That's
so
funny. It actually
funny.
Had like one of these signs of a comet actually falling down to Earth. So it was
So they knew. They knew it was coming. The only thing I want to know is how do you have two meteorite, you know, findings in Alabama and it never ends up in the song like Sweet Home Alabama?
I know.
You know, how do you not talk about that? That's crazy.
That's like epic. That's pretty epic.
It is
epic. Do keep an eye out. You know, I mean, that raises, you know, some real questions. I mean, now don't worry about, you know, getting hit by a meteorite. That's pretty rare, but it has happened. You know, we actually have documented incidences since then of meteorite falls, but none where the meteorite actually hit a person and they survived. We have one in Spain where it went through a guy's windshield, it bounced off the steering wheel and landed in the back seat. So it technically did not hit him.
Yeah, but his car. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, David, you have convinced me forever never to take a nap on my living room couch. So I'm going to tell you that right now. And I appreciate you that. No, listen, I want to live. Okay. So if I got a nap elsewhere, I'll nap elsewhere. And
well,
thank you.
You know, I mean, if you do get a meteorite landing in your house,
I'll be sure to call
you. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Because right now they've actually valued that meteorite because of its history and provenance. It probably ends up like on some kind of, you know, one of those little PBS antique roadshows.
Sure.
Yeah, but they estimate that its value is probably about $1 million.
I don't want to get hit. I'm going to tell you right now. I don't want to get hit. I'm not in the mood. I don't know. David, always very interesting. Thank you.
We'll put a little Comet Theater right in front of your house.
Great. Yeah, great. Just put a huge sign, Comet, stop here. Good Lord.
Yes.
David, thank you so much. Always a great time with you. And we'll talk again next week.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. And right now we are connecting with Jocelyn Hillard, who is the Regional Communications Director at the American Red Cross Connecticut and Rhode Island region. Welcome back to the show, Jocelyn. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me, as always.
So kind of concerning news, not too surprising, but, you know, coming off the pandemic, the nation's most frequent disaster continues to be home fires. What can you tell us about this?
So across the country, the American Red Cross responds to an emergency every 8 minutes. And oftentimes we think about those natural disasters, hurricanes, wildfires, but the reality is that most of those emergencies are home fires that affect us here in Connecticut and in our communities and neighborhoods every single day. You know, here in Connecticut, the American Red Cross responds to around 2 fires every day. And across the country, not only do we see, you know, around a 27% more home fires in November and March in those colder months than warmer months, but right now, since Labor Day, you know, the Red Cross here in Connecticut has seen a nearly 50% increase in local home fire responses. And that's pretty alarming and something that, you know, we want to make sure that people are aware of and that you're taking the steps today to help our communities and help yourself.
So, Jocelyn, obviously a huge reason for that jump is because people are home more than they were before. I would imagine that's one of the biggest reasons. If they're not at work, they're working from home. Kids were at home. So that can certainly take a big chunk of why we're seeing such an uptick. What are some of the most common reasons for those fires, though? So obviously people are home, but like, what's causing the fires?
So you are correct. You know, with COVID and we are home more, our routines are a little different. We do see that, you know, is part of the reason why we've seen the increase in home fires. But, you know, year to year, cooking fires are the leading cause of home fires and home fire injuries. And then heating fires are the second leading cause. So you can imagine that's why we have seen such an increase as we are starting to get into these colder months.
So call me crazy, Jocelyn, but like both of those things, for example, and of course, I'm not speaking for every single instance, but, you know, like heating fires, for example, or people who, you know, with cooking, you know, leaving it unchecked or, you know, even like candle fires, things like that. I would have thought we'd see a decrease, honestly, in fires and call me crazy. But I thought we would have seen a decrease just because a lot of times it's people who just unfortunately, and I've been in that situation before where I've forgotten that I left the oven on. I get in my car and I go, oh, shoot, turn back around. You got to shut the oven off. I would have thought with people being home more that we would have avoided more fires. Why is that not the case?
You know, I'm not sure, but, you know, as we, you know, look into alternative heating sources, you know, right now I'll say I have a space heater in my office with me, that we might not have a space heater throughout the whole year, but though, you know, space heaters, alternative heating sources, making sure that those are not anywhere near curtains or anything that might catch on fire. So I think it's about, you know, being mindful and making sure that, you know, we're always staying vigilant when you say we're checking our ovens, you know, making sure when we're doing cooking dinner that we're watching our stove, we're watching what's going on. And I think it's just about being vigilant. People are home more and, you know, there's plenty of distractions that go on throughout the day. So, you know, I'm not sure why, you know, that might be, but, you know, the takeaway is that, you know, home fires happen every single day and we need to make sure that we are taking those steps to prepare ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And look, we're entering into December. This is the time to talk about it, especially with the colder months. We're talking to Jocelyn Hillard. She's the Regional Communications Director at the American Red Cross here in Connecticut. So, Jocelyn, the Red Cross, I know, has a critical need for disaster action team volunteers. Tell us about that.
So we do have a critical need for disaster action team volunteers, and those are volunteers that go out to homes that have, you know, families that have been affected by these home fires, and where they're providing comfort and care to those families that might not know what to do next. When a fire happens, your first responders, of course, your firefighters, police officers, EMTs, those who are there to take care of the immediate needs of the situation are there. And the Red Cross volunteers are also our secondary responders. We're asking, hey, how are our families doing? What do you need? Are you okay? And this is, you know, a really unique opportunity to give back to your community. And our disaster action team is, you know, all volunteer based. So these are our volunteers, people who are waking up in the middle of the night, taking time off after their workday to say, hey, I want to help, and I'm going to do it by, you know, providing that immediate care when a fire happens. So as we've seen an increase in fires and with, you know, some of the challenges that we've all experienced with COVID, we really are asking for additional volunteers to step up and raise their hand and say, I'd like to help. So we're asking today if you're interested in helping to become a disaster action team volunteer and really make a difference.
And can you just sign up online for that?
Yes, you can go to redcross.org/CT and learn about our volunteering and other programs.
And Jocelyn, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, because we only get to check in with you once a month. How are we doing with blood supply?
So our blood supply right now, we are actually seeing some of the lowest donor turnouts in the last decade.
Wow.
So, you know, switching gears really quick here with our blood supply, you know, it's really important, especially as we are heading into the holiday season. You know, we've seen some challenges throughout the year with blood donor turnout. Not only have we had changes in schedules, people are staying home, or, you know, we're not hosting those big blood drives at companies like we might have done in the past. You know, we're running into a serious concern here in the holidays that our blood supply is at one of the lowest times we've ever seen in the last decade. And so, you know, I know I come on here every month and provide this update, but I'm asking you today, make it part of your holiday routine and be that advocate for blood donation, because our patients, our communities need that support.
And Jocelyn, you know, when you hear something like you just said, which is that we have some of the lowest blood supply levels that we've seen in more than a decade, to me, that screams needing change. And I was just curious if you know on a national level, because I know this is out of your jurisdiction, but I was just curious if on a national level there's been pushes to change the way that we look at volunteers, or we look at, I should say, donors. Because I know at this point, if you're someone of the LGBTQ community, if you're gay, for example, you cannot donate blood. Any talks in changing that so that we can get more people to donate? Because I know the American Red Cross does an amazing job of checking your health status, making sure that you're vaccinated, things like that. I'm just wondering if anything has been brought forward to change what we're looking for in our donors.
Of course, you know, regulations around giving blood donation, depending on travel, medication, lifestyle, that is determined by the FDA, and we follow the FDA guidelines, as do all of the other blood, you know, suppliers throughout the country. But, you know, please know that the American Red Cross, you know, believes that blood donor eligibility should not be determined by methods that are based upon sexual orientation, and we're always committed to working with partners to achieve that goal. So, you know, we have our teams out there. We are constantly, you know, working with the FDA to relook at those guidelines, and, you know, I'm happy to provide some additional information for you after this call.
Jocelyn, we always appreciate having you on. And again, if anybody wants to volunteer, learn more, donate blood, find a place you can go, go to redcross.org. And of course, you could search right here in Connecticut. We thank you always for coming on, Jocelyn. Thank you.
Of course. Happy holidays, Melissa.
Thanks, you
too. It's time to get up and get moving. Workout Wednesday. Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
With our wellness coach, of course, Amy Linus. What would I do without her? What would we do without her? Good morning, Amy. How was your Thanksgiving?
Good morning, Melissa. It was wonderful. How about yours?
It was good. It was really good. I almost would have made you proud. but then I packed a second plate, and I was like, oh, I'm going to eat this tomorrow. And I ate it on the ride home. So I definitely had two dinners within like 4 hours. And I thought, Amy would not be happy with this decision. But I did go to my Orange Theory class next morning, 6:30 in the morning, and it hurt. It was not
fun. There you go. That's my girl. You also have a toddler to run around after, so I think you're good.
Okay. All right. Well, as long as you're giving me the pass, I'll take it. I'll take it. But
I think so.
I will say, Amy, you know, with this month coming up and in even getting into January, I think everyone is sort of out of routine. You've got kids who are out of school earlier than they usually would be. You've got you have different parties going on. You're going and running around, getting gifts, whatever it may be. People are just busy and they're out of routine, and maybe going on your walks every night, or going for your gym classes, or doing certain things that you would every week is sort of out of the lineup for the next few weeks. So how do we kind of maintain or stay on some kind of a track if we're so out of routine?
Yeah, it is. And it's not a free rite of passage just because the holidays are here. You know, most of us hit Thanksgiving and we're like, oh, you know, I'm not going to do what I'm supposed to. However, you have to. So I always tell people, something is better than nothing. So if you can't get to the gym because you don't have that 45 minute to an hour window of time, in your schedule. Do something quick at home. Like, for example, if you – this happened to me on Monday. I had a holiday party to go to. I had about 15 minutes. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to kill it in these next 15 minutes. And I did. And I ended
What'd you
up
do?
Having a better workout. A lot of supersets. Yeah. I ended up having a better workout in those 15 minutes because I was pressed for time than if I had a full hour. Because I was like, all right, let me see how much I can get in and get done. And because of that and doing all those supersets, I don't recommend that all the time. But when you're, you know, pinched for time, doing those supersets will actually elevate your heart rate a little bit more. You'll burn a little more calories. So not actually a bad thing. So just take the time you're allotted and do something with it rather than sit around and be mopey about how you aren't back in your routine.
Amy, I have a question. For anyone who is maybe new to like the workout lingo, what is a superset?
Yes, I was getting ready to explain that too, so I'm glad you asked. So a superset is, say, for example, I'll give you an example. Say you're doing bicep curls, all right? So you do one set of 15 repetitions, then you immediately go into tricep extension. So that's kickback. So you've got your push and pull muscles working together, so you're keeping your body nice and balanced while you're training as well.
Okay.
So it's essentially doing two exercises back to back.
Gotcha. Instead of taking a break. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That, okay, good. I'm glad that we explained that. And the other thing too, Amy, is, you know, you said if you can't get to a gym or you can't get anywhere, I mean, 15 minutes, that really seems like that's a very small amount of time, but you're saying that could make all the difference. Like you could find something at home to do.
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. And then psychologically you're going to feel better too. You're not going to feel like, oh, my goodness, I just ate so much at this party. Yeah, you're not in your normal routine, but you're not completely letting it go either.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, meeting yourself in the middle, so to speak.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing I notice, Amy, and I don't know if this is just like mind over matter, but for me, being a foodie especially, if I don't work out that day, I have literally no desire to eat healthy, if that makes sense. So if I go you know what I mean? Like if I go to a workout class, that rest of the day, I just feel like, man, I just worked, you know, so hard that I don't want to eat that pasta. In you know, but can you get that same effect if you don't go to some crazy workout class or do an hour worth of work? Can you still feel the effects of that in a 10 or 15 minute workout at home?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. You definitely can. Yeah. Now, granted, it won't be what you're used to. But like I said before, psychologically, mentally, and emotionally, it's going to give you that willpower that you need to kind of push through and make those mindful choices and decisions when you're out and about. Yeah, it will be the same effect, without a doubt.
Now, Amy, I'm curious before I let you go. So if you are at home, let's say you don't really have a lot of exercise equipment or you don't have like a stationary bike or a treadmill, you know, what would you suggest? I mean, it may sound silly, but like even just going up and down a flight of stairs, you know, a few times, like what are some things that you could do? What are some ways you get crafty?
Oh, yeah. You can do that. You can go up and down the stairs. You can do a lot of body weighted exercises. I have a lot of those on our website. So if anybody's really interested, a lot of the workouts I have listed there, instructional videos, you can do just about everything on our site at home. You don't really need to be in the gym for it. And that's on www.fitbodyvibe.com. We are on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. So, yes, you really don't need a lot of equipment to get it done. And you're on the right track, Melissa. You know what you're talking about.
Only because I have you in my corner and I talk to you almost every day. So let's be real. I don't know what I would do without you. Amy, what is that website one more time if people want to see some of those workouts?
Sure. It's www.fitbodyvibe.com.
All right. Amy Linus, I tell you are going to help us get through the holidays and stay on track. We so appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for having me on. I'll see you next week.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much. Amy Linus, who is our wellness coach here.
All right.
On
good
WICC.
Morning.
Joining us now is Lieutenant Steven Cerrone with the Monroe Police Department. Lieutenant, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Good morning. This is actually Officer Ebert. Lieutenant Corona has me doing the interview, so he just wanted me to let you know.
Well, now I feel like a jerk. Hold on. Wait a minute. Hold
Don't
on.
Don't worry about it.
Hold the phone. So what is your name, sir? I'm so sorry.
It's Officer Ebert.
Officer Ebert. Well, thank you so much for being here. I'm so sorry that I totally just ruined the beginning of this interview, so I'm so sorry about that. How
you
are
didn't
you
ruin
doing?
Anything. No, I just appreciate you guys having us on.
No, I think this is so great, Officer Ebert. So the Monroe Police Department, first time ever, is going to do Stuff the Gazebo Toy Drive. What is that?
So we're going to be holding it in front of on the town green, which is right in front of the town hall at 7 Fan Hill Road. There's a big gazebo out there, and we're going to try to stuff as many toys inside the gazebo on December 11th from 11 to 4. We're going to try to get as many toys in there to benefit the Center for Family Justice, which is located down in Bridgeport.
And we love the Center for Family Justice. We have them on pretty often here on WICC. We're partners with them as well. They provide crisis and supportive services to people who are impacted by domestic violence in the family and things like that. So I'm very excited that you guys are pairing with them. They help a number of different municipalities, including Monroe, but also Bridgeport, Easton, Fairfield, Stratford, and Trumbull. What are you guys looking for specifically in donations?
So what they really want, they want some Marvel superhero action figures. They're calling for some LOL dolls, dinosaurs, Lego sets, Barbies, Cabbage Patch dolls, or even some gift cards, either Target, Walmart, and about $25 or less in denominations around that amount.
Wow. First of all, I love the fact that Cabbage Patch Kids are still wanted so many years later. I think that's really neat. Why did the Monroe Police Department decide to pair up with these guys? Why now?
So we work with them a lot. They're a great program. They provide a lot of services to a lot of our residents that live in town here in Monroe. So we see the need for the toys for the kids. And the calls we go on for domestic violence or sexual abuse or anything like that, we always see the kids are impacted the most. And we want to be able to bring some cheer to them during the holiday season. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to do. We want to really create a positive impact for them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, and look, from a police standpoint, Officer Ebert with the Monroe Police Department, could you kind of tell us, you know, we've seen a massive spike in domestic violence incidents in the last year, really since the pandemic started. You know, from your point of view, what are police sort of facing here in Connecticut?
Exactly. It's a very difficult call for any police officer to go on, any domestic violence calls or anything that involves that. So what we see a little more of an uptake this year, especially people being home more often, people being more financial burden, which causes more problems. So whenever we have we can do something positive like this, we're going to jump on it and do it. So this is why we're doing it this year.
Yeah. I mean, are you hoping that this becomes an annual event for the Monroe Police Department?
We're going to continue this every year. We've already received a lot of positive feedback from the town and from surrounding towns as well. So we're going to keep it going.
That's great. I love that. So, again, it's happening on Saturday, December 11th. So you guys have time from 11 to 4 in the afternoon. Now, again, are they specifically looking for, I would imagine these are new but unwrapped, right? You don't want them wrapped up?
Exactly. Just so we know what we're getting. If they're wrapped, we don't know what it is. We don't know who to give it to. So new unwrapped toys would be perfect.
And too often, Officer Ebert, people will focus on the little kids. It's easy to shop for babies, easy to shop for toddlers and even elementary school students. But this is also covering the range of even middle and high schoolers, correct?
Exactly. And those are that's the age group that's usually the toughest to shop for. Mm-hmm. So that's why the gift cards play a big role in that. So if you're able to donate a gift card, maybe it's a little easier. You don't have to try to pick out exactly what toy to get. Any gift card, $25 or less for Target, Walmart, or a Visa MasterCard gift card would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of times when you hear about domestic violence, people immediately think of the couple, obviously. They think of the parents or whoever the adults are in the situation. But really, the kids, I mean, and again, from a police standpoint, you guys see it firsthand. The kids really suffer just as much, if not sometimes more, because they really have nothing to do with the situation.
100%, and us as officers, we're human too, and we see that, and it breaks our heart sometimes. So we try to this is why we're doing it. We really care about not only our residents, but our surrounding town's residents as well. So we just want to make sure we give back to the kids.
Well, I love this effort. Again, the Monroe Police Department proud to be hosting its first ever Stuff the Gazebo Toy Drive. It's at the Town of Monroe Green. It's happening next Saturday, December 11th, from 11 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, benefiting the Center for Family Justice in Bridgeport. But it also does help communities, including Easton, Fairfield, Stratford, Trumbull, and, of course, Monroe. And Officer Ebert, I'm so sorry to have gotten off on the wrong foot with you and introduce you incorrectly, but thank you so much for taking the time and coming on this morning.
Anytime. I appreciate you having us. For any other future events, you can always follow us at on Facebook at Monroe, Connecticut Police Department. And thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. Officer Ebert, we thank you so much for your service, and we'll see you next week at the gazebo. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too.